This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Massage Envy, the only podcast devoted entirely to Arkansas baseball. Now here's Matt Jones.
Today on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, Aaron Fitt from D1Baseball.com joins me to share his insights from Arkansas's fall baseball practice. That conversation is coming up after a word from our sponsor.
Massage Envy has been voted the best day spa and best massage in all of Northwest Arkansas. Great therapists and estheticians go along with a new service that I am truly excited about. Rapid Tension Relief uses a special tool that will melt the tension and soreness away. Trust me, you will not be disappointed in the results. I highly recommend this feature along with a total body stretch assisted stretch program. Whether you are competing at a high level or just want to relax, these services are for everyone. Massage, rapid tension relief, total body stretch, deep muscle treatment massage, you choose. Or you can try any combination of those. So the next time you're feeling tight, make sure to call my friends at Massage Envy.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Massage Envy.
Aaron Fitt is one of the most trusted voices in college baseball. He helped found D1Baseball.com. And along with Kendall Rogers and Kyle Peterson, he's one of the most authoritative figures on the game. Aaron spent some time in Fayetteville last month during his fall baseball tour to watch the Razorbacks and get a look at the new $27 million Hunt Baseball Development Center. Today, he's kind enough to take some time to talk with us. Aaron, welcome in, and thanks for agreeing to do this.
My pleasure, Matt. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. So you and I saw each other, what was it, like early, mid-October out at Baumwalker Stadium. You came in for, I guess, a couple of days to take in the Razorbacks and their fall practice. What were your takeaways from seeing this year's team?
Well, you know, everywhere I go this fall, people ask me, hey, who's the best team you saw? You know, who do you really like? And in my case, I think Arkansas is the best team I've seen this fall. You know, I just think that they're loaded, you know, in every facet. I mean, that roster is just built to win big. And, you know, you walk in wondering, you know, how they're going to fill some of these holes. They did lose some key pieces, obviously, from last year's club. And you walk out feeling like, all right, they filled these holes pretty darn well. I mean, got yourselves a real catcher back there. That was a major question. Who's going to replace Opitz? And, you know, seeing what Michael Turner did, I just think that was a fantastic get for them. I mean, that guy's always performed at Kent State. You know, honestly, I think he's a prospect. I'm shocked that he's still playing college baseball, and maybe it's just a matter of not getting the exposure in the premier conferences in the country, but he's going to go out, probably have himself a good year and get drafted pretty well. I mean, because he's got tools. He can really hit. He can really catch and throw. So, you know, that's just kind of an example. One of the things that stuck out to me about Arkansas was, you know, wherever they had a question, it feels like they were able to go out and answer it.
I want to talk to you more about the 22 team and what you saw this fall here in just a minute, but I want to go back first to the way that 2021 ended. Arkansas obviously lost to North Carolina State in that super regional, and you know, you get all this conversation of, oh, you know, were they overrated, were they this, were they that? It seems to me though, Aaron, there were a lot of number one seeds who didn't have to face a team as good as North Carolina State in their super regional that very well could have been the national champion had they not had the COVID issue.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, they were sitting pretty in Omaha, you know, they're 2-0 in the winner's bracket, and then of course the worst possible thing that nobody wanted to see happen in college baseball this year. You know, this is a nightmare scenario. You have a COVID outbreak in Omaha that winds up, you know, ending a team's season when they're one win away from the finals. I mean, it's just a really unpleasant storyline that was not fun to cover this year, I'll tell you that. But that's, you know, to your point, that team was really good. And the ACC hadn't screwed up their scheduling. I mean, you know, they messed it up. They screwed their own teams over. And they also, you know, kind of screwed the other teams over, because when you reduce the number of games that you're going to play from 56 to 50 and you make it a conference heavy schedule, I mean, you're making it so that the RPI is no longer an accurate measure for the quality of these teams. And the committee failed to realize that, you know, so they certainly bear some responsibility too. They did a really bad job of you know, seeding those ACC teams. I mean, Notre Dame wins the league by 5 games and they're not even a top 8 seed. I mean, that's absurd. You know, ask Mississippi State if Notre Dame was for real. They give them all they could handle down there in Starkville. NC State, you know, a team that in a normal year with a normal schedule, with a committee or with a committee that just plain recognized the weirdness of the schedule in 2021, they shouldn't, you know, they shouldn't have been on the road for regional. They should have hosted. You know, that just wasn't in the cards because this committee just leaned on the RPI as a crutch like they always do, even though the RPI didn't really, you know, apply the same way this year. And so as a result, NC State, you know, they're underseeded. They're a 2 seed on the road in a regional. They wind up at the number 1 national seed in a super. That's not fair to Arkansas either. I mean, you know, you've got this team coming in as a 2 seed, won a regional that should have hosted somewhere. I mean, that's a tough draw for Arkansas, for a team that had, in my opinion, you know, the best regular season of any team we've seen in the last 20 years. And right up there with 2019 Vanderbilt, you know, and a few others like that have won the SEC regular season and conference tournament. But, you know, to do it with the schedule that Arkansas faced, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it was by far the toughest schedule in the country, and to win all those games, all those weekends away from home. I mean, it was 20-4 against teams that went on to host regionals.
With
17 of those wins coming away from Bomb Walker. I mean, that is mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling what they did to go the whole year wire to wire, not lose a weekend, and play that kind of a schedule. I mean, we're not, you know, there's no overrated about it. There's no exaggerating. This team was really, really good. It's just that by the end, you're facing a red hot team at NC State. And I guess the one kind of flaw that Arkansas was able to overcome was, you know, a little bit of a lack of depth on the mound. I mean, really, it was the Kevin Kopp show, and you had Wicklander, of course. But beyond that, it was just like once they lose Paulette, that was a huge blow. Mm-hmm. They kept winning despite that because they were so darn good. But I mean, that was always maybe in the back of your mind something that you probably had to worry about that could bite them at the wrong time. And that's what happened.
And you mentioned all those teams they beat away from home. They come to Fayetteville this year. It's an incredible home schedule. They play Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, and LSU at Bomb Walker Stadium this year. Let's reimagine this. If Arkansas would have gotten to the College World Series, their quadrant would have been Vanderbilt, Texas, and Mississippi State, and they had beaten all of those teams last year. How do you think they would have fared had they made it to Omaha, been able to get past NC State?
I guess it's anybody's guess, right? I mean, they're certainly good enough to beat anybody. They proved that because they did beat just about everybody, you know, all year long, all the best teams. It's just a matter of, do they have enough pitching? And I think they did, because the way Omaha is structured, you know, with the days off, if you can stay in the winner's bracket, you don't need, you know, more than a handful of arms to win it all. And so I honestly think that one kind of weakness for Arkansas wouldn't have really necessarily been exposed in Omaha. I mean, especially they could just kind of catch their breath and get back to playing with the kind of swagger, you know, and just belief that they had all year long. I mean, it was kind of one of those refuse to lose deals. Sure, they had a lot of talent, but also it was a sum is better than the parts kind of a team, you know. It's just that it factor that you can't quantify. They had it. And for a lot of teams that kind of go wire to wire like that, it's tough. I mean, how, you know, there's a reason I think we haven't seen a number one national seed win at all since 1999.
That's right.
Cause Vanderbilt wasn't in 2019 as good a year as they had. I think they were the 2 seed. So, I mean, it's just really hard to be that team the whole way. And I do think that the pressure that kind of mounts, I mean, look at the, you know, 2007 Patriots. By the end of the year, it seems like it was getting harder and harder, right? I mean, you have this crazy win against the Giants in the end of the regular season. And I mean, it's just like you get to the postseason, it becomes kind of a slog, even though you're this incredible team, you have this incredible season. I think it's like that for all teams in every sport that have that kind of a year. It's just, it becomes harder. It really does.
I want to ask you about what you saw from Kevin Copps last year. Because I know you've seen a lot of the great college baseball players over the last many years. It seemed to me like almost equated it to watching a stunt actor who gets so good at their craft that they keep kind of pushing the limit a little bit more. And that's what you saw with Copps. It was like, okay, he went 4 innings last week. here's five, here's six and a third, here's seven and two thirds. And then you get to the regional and the super regional, and he's doing every inning that he comes out, you're thinking there's no way he can go any further. And he continues to do it, and he continues to pitch really well up until Jose Torres hits the home run off of him in the ninth inning. I just wonder what you saw or what you thought as you were watching him last year. And it's so easy to say that we're never going to see anything like that again. But I mean, do you really think we'll never see something like that again? Because that's certainly how I feel.
I love your analogy there, Matt, the stunt man who keeps pushing it. That's a great comparison. I mean, it's just the high wire act. And then they just, you know, they had no choice. They had to keep asking more and more out of him. And heck, he was a 6-year senior, and, you know, he just, like, it's not like, you know, I mean, he wound up getting drafted pretty good, but it's not like we're talking about some, you know, 21-year-old fireballer who's going to be a top five pick in the draft. I mean, you know, you can ask a lot out of this guy, this kind of rubber arm older guy. I think he could pitch in the big leagues, but you know, it's not like a prized prospect, I guess, you know. And it's incredible that he turned himself into a prospect and got drafted as, you know, as such an older player, because you don't see a whole lot of that. I mean, MLB teams are so biased against the old guys. But anyway, I mean, it was a season for the ages. I mean, there's no other way to put it, you know, to see a primary reliever win the Golden Spikes Award. That hadn't happened in a very long time. And was it Darren Dreifert, maybe, the year he won it? You have to go back and look, but it's
93.
It's not a common thing. And, you know, just the impact that he had on so many games, their ability to extend him. You know, for a while I thought, okay, it's kind of like Scott Biddle at Ole Miss, where he's got this kind of the one pitch, the cutter. You know, Biddle called his the thing. You know, I think Cops was it the alien or whatever. I don't know what they called it. I think it had some nickname, didn't it? That pitch.
Well, yeah. Well, Matt Hobbs said you could call it Steve. I don't care what you call it. He said it's just good.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but it's, you know, you got that one pitch, but he was more than that, because he, you know, he actually had a curveball, and he, you know, fastball had a little bit of ride to it, and he just mm-hmm. just enough juice and just a pitchability. I mean, there was certainly a number of different weapons there. He even had a changeup. I mean, he had different ways to keep hitters off balance. It's just that when it came down to it, you know that cutter's coming and you're not going to hit it. And you know, it's just so fun when a guy has such complete control of his craft and such mastery. It's just and again, the storyline is absurd. I mean, we're talking about a guy, you know, a guy who actually asked the coaching staff before the season if you guys even want me back, you know. And for that guy to go on and win the Golden Spikes Award, I mean, I'm at a loss for words. It's just uh-huh. like, and I remember I saw him in the Coastal Plain League the previous summer. I'd seen him a number of times over the years, of course, but I walked away and I was, you know, I made some notes in my book, like, oh, this cutter is a really good pitch. You know, this guy, like, he could be a difference maker. But even that day in the Coastal Plain League, he got knocked around. And it's uh-huh. like, you know, like the stuff didn't quite match up with the results. It had been like that throughout his career. And it's like, I don't know what's missing here, because, you know, he's got that pitch. It's such a weapon, but you get knocked around, you know, by mediocre players in the Coastal Plain League. It just, like, it didn't add up. I never would have saw, you know, 2021 coming for that guy. One of the all-time great stories in college baseball.
Well, and I think he's a good example of sometimes you don't know in the fall what the players are going to be like in the spring. Last fall, he was pitching well, but he wasn't dominating the hitters. And even his first game of 2021 was against Texas Tech at the college baseball showdown in Arlington. Texas Tech hit him around. I remember having the thought as I was watching that, is Kevin Copps ever going to be able to put it all together? And then sure enough, within like 2 or 3 weeks, he looked like a different person.
That's crazy that, you know, even at that point, even when the season started, he wasn't yet Kevin Copps.
Exactly.
Mean, it's nuts.
So let's talk about what you saw this fall from Arkansas. When you and I were talking in Fayetteville about a month ago, I know you commented on the transfers. You really like the transfers they brought in.
Yeah. I think they did as well on the transfer market as any team out there, you know. And we talked about Michael Turner, which I think was the most pressing need behind the plate. But then you add a guy like, you know, Chris Lanzilli, who's actually been an All-American in college baseball in the ACC. You know, I know that he didn't have a very good year last year, but he's been a performer for a long time, and he hit the ball hard this fall. I know that the coaching staff is really high on him. He's a strong guy. He's worked to improve his defense, you know, so maybe he'll be out there in left field or maybe he'll be a DH, but you got to feel like that bat, that right-handed bat will be in the lineup, given some power there. And then Jace Borifin, of course, from Oklahoma, a guy that they really liked out of high school. They'd recruited him, tried to get him then and went to Oklahoma instead. And so when he entered the portal, it was kind of a no-brainer. They jumped right on it. And he had a great summer in the Cape League. You know, it was kind of a buzzy guy in the Cape, really put that tools package to use. And I mean, he's physical and he's athletic and, you know, he's not like a burner, but he runs fine. And he gives you that left side strength and physicality. So, you know, those three guys, I got to imagine, are going to really, really be difference makers here for this lineup that already has plenty of stars back, you know, with Robert Moore, of course, and Slavens and Wallace. I mean, Wallace is the guy that, you know, last year we did this kind of Golden Spikes draft where we tried to pick, you know, like we each had five picks and we're trying to predict who could win the Golden Spikes award. None of us had Kevin Copps, by the way. That might surprise you.
Well, he wasn't even on the midseason watch list for the Golden Spikes.
That's right. But my first, I mean, Caden Wallace would be one of my first picks. I just think this guy is going to have a monster year. I think he's going to be a top 10 pick as an eligible sophomore, assuming he's eligible, which we don't know the draft date yet, but we think he'll be eligible.
Right.
It's a tooled up guy. And I loved how he looked at third base too. That's one thing I was curious about, because he, you know, played right field last year. That arm is such a weapon no matter where you put him. But boy, he looked, just when he moved and the instincts at third base in the couple of days I was there this fall, I'm sold. I really like him there.
And just so people understand about Caden Wallace and how the draft affects him, his birthday is August the 7th. If the draft is kind of what we consider the traditional dates in college baseball or MLB, that's usually somewhere in like the June 10th to 13th range, he would not be eligible for the draft this year. But if the MLB draft is in July again, as it was this last year, then he would be eligible for the draft. And that's a hard thing, Aaron, that he doesn't know if he's going to be, if this is going to be his last year at Arkansas, or, you know, if he's going to have to wait another year to be draft eligible.
Yeah, it's weird. And it's and maybe that's helpful in a way. You can just go out there and not worry about it. Just, you know, one day at a time kind of deal. I'm sure we'll know probably, you know, well before, I don't know when they set the date, but he'll have plenty of lead time. But I mean, you know, the bottom line is go out there and perform, and the draft will take care of itself. We also hear players say that, and that's true, you know. So however it plays out, I think it's a 45-day window from the draft day what determines when a player is eligible.
Yep. So that's why he wouldn't be in June. So you mentioned you think Arkansas is the best team you saw this fall. How many teams have you seen this fall? And as you look at 2022, I mean, I think with everybody, the Razorbacks have coming back, everybody expects them to be a highly ranked team, top 10, top 12, somewhere in there. Who are the other teams, though, that, you know, as we're 3.5 months away from the start of the season, who are the other teams that you think are going to be in that national conversation at the start of the year?
Yeah. So, you know, my travels took me everywhere I had a little Arkansas, Oklahoma run. I did a Mississippi run, Alabama, you know, down through Florida and all the way up through the Carolinas and Georgia and into Maryland. So I think I saw, 35, 40 teams, probably something like that. Trying to, you know, focus on, of course, all the power fives and the really good, strong mid-major contenders in that region. I might even see a couple more teams before it's over. But I would say for me, the teams, you know, besides Arkansas that stood out, I mean, I thought Oklahoma State looked really good. And it's another team that, like Arkansas, really helped themselves on the transfer market. And, you know, like Arkansas, you've got a couple of these emerging dudes that are ready to, I think, to be big stars, you know. And in their case, it's kind of a couple of these pitchers that are almost like the Peyton Paulettes, where it's like, okay, I mean, this, you know, this guy, he's been a big name guy, Bryce Osmond, Cale Davis. And these guys have been big name recruits. Now it's like kind of their time, you know, and you can see it coming. And so I thought they really stood out. Certainly Mississippi State is going to be there once again. They're kind of like Arkansas, where it's like, they're both great last year, of course. And it feels like this is, I'm not going to say that, you know, they're going to drop off a cliff or anything next year, but it's, they're going to be a little bit of a reload for both of those programs after this year. So it's kind of like, you know, even the elite programs, there are windows, and sometimes the windows, you know, are a little bit more generous for some programs than others. I mean, Arkansas and Mississippi State are always going to be competitive, but as far as like looking at them as national title contenders, you know, this might be the end of that window for another couple of years. I don't know. They're going to be very good again. I mean, we'll see how Landon Sims does in the starting role. I think that's the plan for Mississippi State. I think that'll work out just fine. They've got other guys emerging at the back end that I think will pick up the slack there. And it's another good offense, you know, athletic. I mean, they've got some big shoes to fill there. No Tanner Allen, no Rowdy Jordan, but boy, there's a lot of talent there. So they look great. Ole Miss has everybody back in the lineup. You know, from a team that was already, I thought, an elite offensive team last year. Really, it's like their top 12 hitters are all back. Sure, you lose Doug Nikhazy and Gunnar Hoagland, but I was there, you know, for a scrimmage where they threw all their like top six arms, and I was impressed. I walked away thinking, okay, you know, they've got to prove it a little bit, but the talent is definitely there with those guys. So they feel like an easy top 10 kind of a team also. So, and I saw Vanderbilt, and it's kind of like, you know, yeah, you lose Rocker and Leiter. Those are big names. Those are two first team All-Americans and top 10 picks. Almost anyone else would take a step back after you lose those guys, but they're Vanderbilt. They're going to be fine. You know, they just reloaded, and you got the next kind of wave of guys emerging on the mound. You know, the Patrick Rileys, they need him to kind of be the dude this year. You know, maybe Christian Little. I mean, these are elite talents that have elite stuff, and just a matter of doing it. So they're in a way like kind of in that same boat with Ole Miss, where you got more veteran position player group. I'm not worried at all about the lineup, but you know, you've got a lot of talent on the mound that still needs to kind of, you know, prove itself.
I feel like this is like the fifth year in a row Ole Miss has had all of its hitters back. I don't know how that works. It just seems like every year they always have a ton of guys back from the previous season. I know when you go places in the fall, and one of the things I really wanted to ask you about, Aaron, is that you got to see or when you go places in the fall, you get to see you know, some behind the scenes type stuff. And you got to go through the Hunt Center, the $27 million baseball performance center that Arkansas just opened. You've seen the other ones. You've seen Obrate Stadium. You've seen Duty Noble. And I'm not talking about from a game day atmosphere perspective. I think everybody knows that Arkansas is right there with, you know, probably three or four others as far as the best game day atmosphere in the country. But what I want to know is about the player development facility. Number one, what did you see from the Hunt Center? Mm-hmm. And number two, you know, when you talk to coaches or ADs, you're going to get the PR talk. This is the best. There's nothing else like this in the country. Is it really that far advanced from what you see at other places? And if so, how so?
Yeah, it's pretty special. I mean, you know, Dave Van Horn called it his Division I football building, and I think that's fair. I mean, I've been through some pretty impressive Division I football facilities, and this is, you know, maybe a little bit of a smaller version of that, because you don't have, 75, 80 guys on your roster. You don't need as much space, but I mean, it's big, and it's first class all the way. I mean, certainly the pitching lab was awesome. I mean, Matt Hobbs gave me a very in-depth tutorial on all that, the technology in there. And I mean, that guy is so smart. He's such a smart pitching guy. They're lucky to have him, but yeah, the weight room and, you know, the weight room is awesome. And just the way the whole thing's interconnected, and the, you know, the window is kind of looking up from this meeting room down through the weight room down into the, you know, it's just like everything is just, the flow of it is really cool. The locker room, I mean, it's first class as you would imagine. It's awesome. It, you know, blows you away, but all the different facilities, and it's just very thoughtful touches under there. I mean, it's certainly as good as there is in college baseball. And I thought, you know, Oklahoma State stuff is comparable. Really they really focus on player development with their new place, even though it's, you know, it also is visually, the whole place is striking. You know, the game day stuff looks really nice, but I think they spent even more money on the player development thing. That was kind of the focus of their project, and it came out well. Ole Miss, I think, is the other one that I would probably put in the conversation with these. It's a big old, you know, indoor space that they've got there, that building, they opened a couple of years ago. They did a really good job with that one also. And, you know, Mississippi State, I think, had to play a little catch up on the player development piece. They just converted part of the big atrium when you enter the Palmiro Center over there, which is their giant indoor facility, they had been using that atrium as kind of a banquet space, but this fall they converted it to a weight room, and it's big. You know, it's very large. Probably the biggest weight room out there. So, you know, that one stands out as well. But there are some others that are definitely in this conversation, Arkansas. But I don't think any of them are better than what Arkansas has done. It's just it's very cool.
You know, since Dave Van Horn's been at Arkansas, they've always been in the conversation. I mean, they were in the World Series in 04, 09, 12, 15, 18, 19. But it seems to me, Aaron, maybe since that year when they didn't do so well, 2016, when they failed to make the NCAA tournament and lost 13 in a row to end the season, it seems to me like this is a different program. Yeah. And, you know, we're talking about them in a lot different. I mean, they'd never been number one before up until this last season, other than in 2013 in the preseason. That was the only other time they'd ever been a number one program. And then they're number one throughout the season. But they've been in the coaches poll and in your poll and all these different polls top 10 for quite some time. We're talking about several years in a row. What do you think has been the difference in Arkansas the last five or so years versus those first 10 years or more that Dave was here at Arkansas?
That's a great question, because you're right. I mean, the program has definitely reached a higher level, which is saying something, because, you know, they were, you know, an Omaha caliber program for that first decade also. I mean, how many, you probably have it off the top of your brain, how many Omaha trips did they make in that first decade?
They made three, 2004, okay. 2009, and 2012.
Okay. Yeah. That feels
probably
right.
Could have been in the championship series in 12, if not for the Perry Costello game.
Oh boy. Let's not bring that one up. But you're right. I mean, that was a really good Arkansas team. Yeah. I mean, so they'd already been an Omaha caliber program, but it does feel like now it's only a matter of time before they win it all. Like they, you know, they were obviously right there, in 2018, but you know, last year they had the best team in the country. And I do feel like their recruiting has ticked up some. They always recruited well. They always had talent. But, I mean, It's just – it does feel like it's at a little bit of a different level now. And the other thing is this. You know, you think about – I think Vanderbilt and Florida have kind of been at the top for the last, 6 years of our kind of every 2 years we do the top 100 program rankings. Mm-hmm. And those two have kind of flip-flopped back and forth for number one spot, Vanderbilt and Florida. But it took those guys a decade. It took Corbin a decade to kind of even break through. And it took Brian O'Connor a decade, John Savage. I mean, all these guys, it took them a while to really kind of reach that top level. And in some cases, just to get to Omaha for the first time, like Vanderbilt didn't get there until, well into the Corbin era. I just think there's some of it is just, even for these great coaches and these great programs, there is still a gradual build that is almost inevitable, to get to that top level. Maybe Sully's the exception, because Florida was there pretty much almost right away. Yeah. They've been kind of a machine since maybe year two there for him, but everyone else, it felt like, you know, to get to that very top, you know, top five, top 10 program kind of a level, it's more gradual. So I don't know if that's a good answer to your question. I don't have a great answer, but it just feels like this program is firing on all cylinders right now.
Well, I've talked to Dave about this before. You know, sometimes it takes coaches a long time to get that championship. And then for some, it's elusive. I mean, Mike Fox never won a championship, right? Martin never won a championship.
I think it was seven Omaha appearances for Mike Fox in the span of, 15 years thereabouts, and couldn't win one, a couple of trips to the finals. Mike Martin, so many trips and so many close calls, but didn't never get it. And and then there are some guys that get it early and then it doesn't come back, you know? I mean, Jim Morris won those two at Miami in 1999 and 01, and then that was it for the next 20 years. So, it's hard. It's just, and so much of it does feel like a crapshoot when you get to the postseason. And I know we always say that and fans just kind of brush us off, but like, it's not usually the hottest. I mean, it's not usually the best team that wins at all. It's usually the hottest team. And that's just the reality.
I mean, you think about Pat Casey, Ray Tanner, it took them, you know, many, many years after they had built programs for them to get that or to get their programs at a championship level.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Pat Casey, you know, first 10 plus years at Oregon State, they didn't even make a regional, right? And then they get to Omaha in 05 out of nowhere. Nobody saw that coming. They weren't even on the map, really. And I thought they would make a regional that year. I had a bet with somebody in the office that they were going to make a regional. And that seemed like an outlandish bet because they hadn't been to a regional in over a decade, you know? So it's like, it's hard to imagine that in hindsight, that like saying Oregon State is going to be in a regional seemed crazy, but like, that's where that program was. And, you know, then they make three straight Omaha runs and all of a sudden it's just a game changer. So you got to love college baseball. It's just, you know, that some of the building stories are really cool.
I'll tell you something else that Arkansas has done in the last five or so years that catches my attention is that Dave has hired assistant coaches who are really all in on analytics, whether it be Wes Johnson, who's now with the Twins. You mentioned Matt Hobbs, Nate Thompson obviously is as a hitting coach. That feels like a different approach than what Arkansas had maybe over his first 10 to 15 years in Fayetteville. You mentioned Hobbs, and I wanted to ask you about him and Nate Thompson. It feels to me like these two could be head coaches already had they wanted to go somewhere. But you know, they're probably biding their time a little bit. I mean, where do you feel like they are stand up as far as coaches who are going to get that big shot?
You know, I had a conversation with Hobbs about this when I was in town last month. And, you know, I don't know how, I don't think he minds me sharing, you know, his opinions on it. You know, I don't know that he necessarily has any particular burning desire to be a head coach. I think he loves being a pitching coach, and I think he loves being at Arkansas. I mean, he could have been a major league pitching coach by now. He's had overtures from big league teams that he's right. turned, that he's, you know, rebuffed. And I just think he realizes that he's got everything he needs at Arkansas, all the resources, certainly the quality of life. You know, his family loves Fayetteville, and you know, he's got bunch of kids, and it's just like the big league grind is probably not something that he necessarily wants with a young family. And but also, boy, I mean, you're kind of a rock star when you're the, you know, the pitching coach at Arkansas. You know, it's like, that's a big job, it's a big deal. And if you're passionate about pitching, maybe you don't necessarily have as much passion for some of the administrative things that are required to be a head coach, then why not, you know, just keep doing what you love as long as you feel like doing it. So I do feel like Nate Thompson maybe is a little bit different. I feel like that's the guy that I could see being a head coach very soon. And that's not based on any conversation with him. I'm sure he's also very happy at Arkansas and is in no hurry to move on, but just the way he's wired, I just envision him being a head coach quickly. And he's going to be a really, really good one because he can do it all. I mean, that's just a superstar guy.
Yeah, I think you're right. Aaron, real quick before we get you out of here, D1Baseball.com, you guys do a great job. What's the offseason look like for you guys here as you kind of lead up toward the preseason in January?
Yeah, we're really deep into fall report mode now. I'm finally basically done my travel for the fall. October, I feel like I'm on the road the whole month, and then I get home in November and I'm just like staring at a huge backlog of teams to write up. So that's going to be my next month is actually writing reports on all these teams that I've seen. And Kendall is still seeing stuff out in the state of Texas. I think he's going to Austin today to see the Longhorns. You know, Mike Rudy and Eric Sorensen, Shotgun Sling, they're all seeing teams out west because those guys go later. And Walter Villa down in Florida is seeing some teams that go later. So we still have a lot of fall reports left. We'll probably keep those rolling right up until the holiday break. And then, you know, we kind of dive right into the season preview stuff once the calendar turns over. So we, you know, podcasts, we'll continue to do those every week. Mike Rooney is doing a great series where he's talking with these fourth coaches, you know, the quote unquote volunteer assistants. Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, Bobby Wearns was one of the first guests, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
He was on the first one. Yep.
Yeah. And he was great. Really sure. Talk about another rising star. I mean, I think Van Horn even told me that guy is going to be a really good head coach in the SEC someday. He really believes that. He's that's how this guy is wired. So he's going to be a star too. But anyway, so that's what we got going on D1 baseball. Everything you need really to cover college baseball. We still have a lot of stuff going on in the off season. And then of course, once we get into February, it's just a full sprint right through the College World Series.
Let's get you out of here on this. Arkansas did something a little bit different this fall, and they didn't play any of the preseason exhibition games. You know, like you got Florida, Georgia, their baseball teams were playing in Jacksonville last week, the day before the cocktail party. Every other SEC team played at least one fall exhibition game this year, and most of them played two. Dave Van Horn told me that he thought it was going to be more beneficial for his team to be able to stay home and scrimmage. He said that whenever you play these exhibition games, sometimes you can actually lose out on, you know, innings that your pitchers get, or just because you're approaching those games differently than you would approach a scrimmage, you know, say on like a Saturday afternoon. I wonder what you've seen from those exhibition games. And I mean, do you see any other programs pulling back on those the way that Arkansas has done?
Not really. You know, NC State, I think, only played one, which was unusual in this area. I feel like all the other ACC teams pretty much played two. That's about the only one I can think of. I mean, everybody, I think, has kind of embraced the opportunity to play those. I think a lot of people really like them and just see the value and, you know, playing somebody with a different uniform and kind of getting, especially some of your less experienced guys, into something that resembles a real game day atmosphere, you know. Uh-huh. And I was in Jacksonville for that Florida Georgia thing, and it is a real atmosphere. You know, they're playing on a Friday night before a big football game, you know, with that crowd there. And it was, you know, neat experience for those younger guys to kind of get a taste of it. So, but even if you're playing on a lazy Saturday against Little Rock, like Ole Miss was, and there's nobody in the stands really, there's still something to be said for playing somebody different and kind of getting a measuring stick. So personally, I really like the fall scrimmages. Mm-hmm. But you know, I mean, Dave Van Horn knows what he's doing and he knows what he likes. So he's been at this a while. Can I say before we go, I can't believe I didn't even talk about my man, Peyton Stovall. This is like, might be my pick for National Freshman of the Year this year.
He's going to be good, isn't he?
I'm so excited about this guy, and I would just feel like an idiot if we went through a whole podcast and I didn't even mention his name, because I'm all in. I mean, it's just a natural born hitter, just the way he controls the zone, ability to use, you know, different parts of the field. I mean, I've kind of compared him to Max Muncy, just because he's like that physical left-handed hitter with a quiet approach who can play, you know, first or second. He kind of fits on that right side of the infield. You know, and Max Muncy's been a big league all-star. It's a pretty good comp, but I mean, Stovall might even be a little bit more twitchy than Muncy. So I don't know. All I know is he's going to be special, and excited to see that guy this year.
And they'll get to keep him for 3 years. I mean, imagine what he'll be by a junior. Oh. He had a hit during the fall, Aaron, and I can't remember if you were there or not. He hit a home run off the batter's eye, and I think that the exit velocity was like 107. Incredible, incredible bat.
I think I was there for that. Was that against Wiggins, maybe? I feel like...
Sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah, he
hit so many that I kind of forget who he hit them all against.
The first day I was there, he hit like two rocket doubles that he turned on. And then the second day, he hit one to center field that I think was on a 95-mile-an-hour Wiggins fastball that he just barreled up. So, yeah, he's got a little bit of bat speed. A little bit of bat speed.
Yeah, I think they're going to be pretty good this year. Well, Aaron, I appreciate your time, and hopefully we can talk to you during the season.
Yeah, Matt, anytime, man. This was fun.
Our thanks to Aaron Fitt of D1Baseball.com. A couple of notes before we go. Dallas Keuchel and Andrew Benintendi won Gold Glove Awards over the weekend. It was the first time that the Razorbacks ever had multiple Gold Glove Award winners in the same year. Now, Arkansas doesn't have a great history of Gold Glove Award winners. Prior to this year, there had only been 7 Gold Gloves won by 2 Razorbacks. Keuchel on Sunday won his 5th Gold Glove. And in the early 1990s, Tom Pagnozzi won 3 Gold Gloves as a catcher for the St. Louis Cardinals. Benintendi, who's in his first year with the Kansas City Royals, won a Gold Glove for the first time. Keuchel is in his second season with the Chicago White Sox. Mentioned last week that Drew Smyly won the World Series for the Razorbacks, just the 5th Razorback to ever win a World Series. The other Razorbacks who have won World Series are Dick Hughes in 1967, with the St. Louis Cardinals. Eric Hinsky won World Series with 2 teams. In 2007, he was a member of the Boston Red Sox. And in 2009, he was a member of the New York Yankees. Keuchel and Benintendi are the other Razorbacks who have won World Series. Keuchel was with the Astros in 2017, and Benintendi was with the Red Sox in 2018. And finally, it's national signing period, the early signing period this week, and the Razorbacks are expected to bring in a great recruiting class. Be sure to go to WholeHogSports.com and Hogs Illustrated, and we'll have coverage of Razorback recruiting plus other sports here in the coming days. This is going to be our final Whole Hog Baseball podcast until closer to the start of the 2022 season. Our thanks to Massage Envy for sponsoring these podcasts this fall. Hope you've enjoyed them, and we'll see you again in early 2022 for the start of the college baseball season.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.